Hello and welcome to Let the Bird Fly, a podcast about living freely in a world given back to us. This is Wade here in the podcast studio with the spring break versions of my dear friends and colleagues, the Reverend Dr. Michael Berg and the Reverend Professor Jason Oakland. One of them is dressed like they're on spring break.
Yeah.
And the other is dressed like a professional. I assume because you're doing stuff at Wisco, or are you just...
Yep. Really last day of the quarter at their final exam today.
Ooh. And I'd say I'm dressed like I'm about to teach a class.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Not feeling well today. Jason got me sick.
Again.
Yeah.
Wow.
And on my bike ride in, someone yelled at me.
Huh?
So I had to say, nice minivan. it's always,
it's always
the ones in like the dumpy cars that like they think they're better because they're like the muffler's going and whatever else, but they...
Were you...
I was on the other side of the road. There was no way I did anything that could have upset... there was no stop sign in the area. I know you're looking for all the bicyclists.
I assume that you
the bike
were...
bike ninja crimes I could have...
I'm assuming that you were obeying the rules of the road.
Have you known me you to bicycle any other way?
That you wanted to and ignore the ones you didn't want to and then said, treat me like a car, but only when I
obey
want to
all the just laws.
Yes. Either obey the laws like you're a car or get off the road.
Yeah. All of the roads were built for bicycles, to be fair.
Then obey the rules.
Yeah. The bicycle rules.
No, you get.
It's like, always you newcomers come and you try to take over our stuff and then like, you refuse to live according to our ways.
There's a stop sign. I don't have to obey that.
You know what this guy did when we were going the other day for our... We had an evening meeting at an establishment, and I don't know why he was driving.
Yeah, I don't know.
But cuts right, you know how there's the dots for when you go across the bike lane to turn right? Mm-hmm. They're supposed to mean something, right? This dude, just right driving in the bike lane to go over to turn right.
Yep.
Well, there's probably not a bicyclist there this time of night. Probably not a bicyclist.
I'm wondering, Jason.
Yes.
The vehicle that you own.
Uh-huh.
A little Toyota.
And the gas that you put in, those are taxed to build the roads, correct?
Last I checked, yes. Okay.
This is a myth, too. And then this is a myth that the gas tax pays for the roads.
The bikes.
Bicyclists
don't pay any taxes for the road, correct?
No, they do not.
No, they do not.
Gas. How much damage do the bicycles do to the road?
Well, considering how many accidents they cause because they don't obey the laws.
It's never an accident. Uh-huh. Never an accident.
Always intentional.
Well, someone was doing something wrong.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, I think...
If they weren't doing something wrong, no one would have got hurt.
Yeah.
Namely, they were driving a car.
The
okay, this is the first episode of the new crime. Let the Bird Fly, where we had all agreed we were going to try to stick to 35 minutes. And I have said, as the most disciplined one, I'm going to keep us on task. So yep. I don't know how Jason got us off topic there.
Yeah.
But we're going to dial it back in. It's just the... Laid me back Jason in his shorts and
that's right.
T-shirt. All right.
Hey, it's College Apparel.
Hey, Michael, did you know we're part of the 1517 Podcasting Network?
I did. It's really a great podcast.
It's been a wonderful blessing. We had a good discussion with some people there the other day, some nice things we're looking forward to doing with the podcast. I believe Peter even touched base on that, so thank you, Peter. We appreciate you. I know you don't listen anymore, but we thank you. We are part of the 1517 Podcasting Network. You can go there to 1517.org, find podcasts, devotions, their publishing house, free academy courses, all sorts of materials. I think Bruce Hillman just has an academy course that came out now. I think early church, I could be wrong. But I encourage you to check that out. Today we're going to be talking about, so we'll be trying to stick to about 35, 40 minutes. And hopefully get some episodes in the pipeline, because what we want to do for you, our listeners, because how do we feel about our listeners, Jason?
We very much appreciate them.
We love our
listeners. And I was going to say, I didn't know if...
Always got to go with the higher word count. We love our listeners. And so we're going to try to be regular in getting episodes out, which means probably getting some in the pipeline. And I think, is it fair to say we're going to aim for releasing episodes Thursday night, Friday morning, most consistently?
And once a week.
Yeah. That's the big thing we're trying to get to. So each week,
which
Thursday evening, Friday morning.
For a while, we were doing 2 a week when we did the Luther thing.
Yeah.
So we can do it.
Yep. It's just, I would say, comparison to that time, we're all, well, two of us are doing a lot more than we were then.
I have a...
Yeah. I agree.
I have time because I drive a car into work, so I don't waste an hour.
You want to talk about cars, Michael? Okay, go ahead.
We can. I will bring it up. Go ahead. Let's move it.
Okay. So we're going to do our best. We're going to try to get some in the pipeline, which means probably stick in 35 to 40 minutes, which I think will make the majority of people happy because that's a digestible portion. And I think it's going to make the few Wade people out there, it's very few, a little sad because I like the long form. I could go 2-3 hours sometimes if we wanted to, but
easily.
I'm going to keep us disciplined.
All right, let's move on.
And so, Jason or Michael, would one of you like to give us the discussion?
The show doesn't speak for our churches and church bodies or our employers.
I'll say the topic during the whistling down the road.
Much of the time, it probably doesn't speak for us. We will be thinking out loud a lot, so approach what you hear with a healthy skepticism. Because, well, as a responsible resident of planet Earth, that's probably what you should generally do with almost everything. If you find yourself getting too worked up, tune out, look around, and realize you were just listening to a podcast. That's right, a podcast, so go live free, friends, and don't let us get in the way.
And now, at this point, listeners, you probably are wondering, 6 minutes in, what is this episode going to be about? It's not going to be about bicycles or automobiles, but technology. We're going to be talking about... I had shared a quote from a Carl Truman article from First Things, and we'll get to that in just a moment. But I thought it was just a spectacular quote. Pretty good article, too, Nihilism in Nazi Germany and Today. Once again, Carl Truman in First Things, so that's what we're going to be talking about. Pretend that I said that in the intro. This is the new look, Let the Bird Fly. We want to have a nice professional start, so let's remember that, or not remember.
Locked we got off my track. Imagination.
We're locked in. Here we go. All right, fresh start. And that brings us to our main topic, which is kind of technology and human nature. I don't know if we have a succinct way to say it, but maybe I can just share the quote. And this is from a First Things article, again, by Carl Truman, as we mentioned in our intro, Nihilism in Nazi Germany and Today. And he talks about people kind of assessing our own day, and they're being drawn to theologians of other days that have faced similar challenges. And Bonhoeffer gets mentioned, and Bonhoeffer gets used by this Roman Catholic scholar, if I remember. And Truman says it's kind of interesting that the Roman Catholic scholar went to Bonhoeffer, the most prominent Lutheran resistor of the Nazi regime, when there was plenty of priests who found their way into concentration camps. But in the midst of it, and we're maybe using this more as the springboard than the article itself, and I'll read the quote and then I'll throw it to Michael, because Michael was the one that thought, hey, let's do this episode. And so Truman writes, "We have witnessed amazing technological advances since the 1940s. The transformation of humanity from a given, limited, teleological essence to a potency whose limits and ends are merely technical problems to be overcome is now complete, at least in the cultural imagination. Ironically, human technical brilliance has served to make human beings into nothing of any great significance. We are the only creatures on the planet who are intelligent and intentional enough to have abolished ourselves." I think that's just a phenomenal quote. And I think it also fits a little bit with what we had talked about a couple of episodes where we kind of hit on human nature and things like that. Michael, what are your thoughts as you read that?
Well, some preliminary thoughts. One is this is in the philosophical era, which we are entering into. You can call it postmodern if you want, post-liberal, post-whatever, where we are waking up to the conclusion that the promises of modernity, largely seen as technological advancements, whether it be in medical advancements or information or transportation, and realize that the promises of modernity that we would become better, that we would reach beyond the religious for sure, if not the philosophical, that we would be happier, healthier, and more advanced, have simply not come true. And in fact, many of those things have made us sicker, less happy, and flattened, less sophisticated, right? I think another issue there is this difference between the animals and human beings. We are full of wonderment and creativity. We are more moral creatures, although you could say, okay, we see these things in the animal kingdom, but we certainly ones are, like I say in the classroom all the time, is the squirrels don't lie in the yard in the middle of the night and look up to the sky and wonder what it would be like to go to the moon, but
not that we know of.
We did, and we did something about it. We form unions and homeowner associations and write down laws, and the animals don't. And that is supposed to make us more sophisticated and better, but we have something called this sinful bound will, right, where we can destroy ourselves for no other reason than we have hate and we have this desire to be self-justified, right? I think maybe if you finally get down the difference between you and the squirrels is you're trying to self-justify, right? And that ends up ruining us, right? And so, and then to his point about technology, that's my third point, and then I'll be done for a while, is that all of this technology often serves to replace ourselves, right? Like the factory worker is replaced. The thinker is replaced because you can just look something up. Now with AI, you can easily give away your intellectual freedom, right? And have somebody else do the thinking for you. And so technology often, in a negative way, serves to make us, if not insignificant, completely irrelevant, and we don't need to be, right? And that's a chilling thing, right? This is Tower of Babel things, right? And so how do you fight against that? And to the same point, why is not all lost, right? I don't think we want this to be too negative, right? So we'll think, you know, image of God talk, vocation talk, justification talk are all relative to this. Yeah.
Jason.
Yeah. I had one of the books that we had to read for it's kind of interesting, one of the courses I'm taking right now is theology and technology, which
this is gonna be my new thing when Jason brags about grad school. I want to give him applause. Give him his flowers.
I was going to say, I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's bragging as much. It could be lamenting.
Sorry,
but
go ahead about your learning this, Jason.
But that was when you suggested this or sent that quote, is like this sounds very familiar to some of the things that we've been reading, one of which was kind of a considered a classic in this area is Technics and Civilization, which is a Lewis Mumford thing, which Lewis Mumford is an interesting character under
is
himself.
Is any relation to Mumford and Sons?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
But that's something that maybe we could dig into. Maybe a future episode, explore that connection.
I think
but
Mike's already checking on his phone.
Yeah, that's right. I think so. But, you know, saying that, you know, this move toward the machine, which almost always is seen as a positive, and you know, this idea of progress and technology and development and all this stuff, you know, people look at that and you know, almost universally say this is a positive thing. And yet one of the things that he says in that book, the one of the big takeaways is that with each step of advancement, and I think he kind of charts three phases, but I think in some ways you might, with the information technology stuff that we have now, I wonder if he were still alive, if he would maybe say that we've entered into a fourth stage with some of that, like Mike mentioned, the AI stuff and things like that. But saying that in each of these stages of advancement from a technological perspective, there's a trade-off, there's an exchange, and that as you step forward in certain areas, you're also taking step backwards in others. And I think, you know, this idea of, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, taking the step forward and things are more mechanized and there's more horsepower and there's more, you know, and all of this stuff. And yet then it leads to a devaluing of the worker and the environment for the sake of production and automation and all these things. And that's just an example of what he's talking about. And I think, you know, this... these advancements or these technologies or these machines, you know, amplify the qualities that's already there, I think, in humanity, right? I mean, you get to see the good things that come about as a result of the creativity and the productivity and all these other things. But at the same time, then it also, the willingness to exploit, the selfishness, those type of things, they also get amplified and oftentimes the focus, it seems, is only on the good side of that, and we forget about maybe that trade-off.
And I think it's fair to say that while there, it's always a good question, let me start over, it's always a good question to ask, what do you lose?
Yeah.
What do you lose with everything? So even when it comes to, like, evangelism, like, how am I going to do evangelism? Okay, I'm going to go knock door on every door. Well, what's the trade-off there? How many people have you ticked off?
Right? Yeah.
So can you do it better, where you're more like, okay, somebody moves into the neighborhood, that's an opportunity to do that, but I'm not just going to go this random, like I'm a vacuum salesman or a Jehovah's Witness.
And I think you could say, well, if you're doing that all the time, what are you not doing, right? You know, there's some of those things too.
So what do you gain and what do you lose with technological advancements? And we're not going to the other extreme where we say, let's just go off the grid and go back to a, you know, agrarian society or something like that.
Right.
What we're saying is be mindful and thoughtful of what you lose, and then how do you thread that needle? How do you combat that? What is worth it and what is not worth it, right? You can apply this to any aspect of life and anything, any aspect in the church as well, right? Like worship. What do you lose when you do this? What do you gain when you do this? And I don't know that we're always in that modern period where we're always old is bad, good is new, that you threw away what you didn't understand, or better yet, you didn't know what you were losing, probably because you didn't understand it. And then you wake up and you're flattened, right? And you don't have depth. And I think that hurts the church. It hurts our society, right? Go ahead.
Is it the Jurassic Park syndrome of, thinking it's all about, can we do this rather than should we? And I think, and trying to consider and anticipate some of the should we problems that come along with that, right? I mean that there are these trade-offs, and you know, sometimes, you know, you talk about unintended consequences. I think at the very, and there are always some of that, but I think to try to be as aware as you possibly can about the trade-off, right?
Yeah, and In our little world, in the academy, so to speak, that sounds arrogant. But I would say, much of this has to do with the silo effect in the university, right? Mm-hmm. Where the chemist never took an ethical, or never took ethics or philosophy class
outside the field, at least.
Yeah, and the theologian, like us,
Took physics.
never, you know, was done with math as quickly as we could be, and done with some of the hard sciences as quickly as we could be, and didn't have a broad worldview, and we lament that coming from a humanities perspective on campuses, but we're guilty of that too, of being in our own silos, right? So, and the easiest one is to say, we can harness atomic energy But there weren't enough voices that said, should we? Or if we do, what do we lose? What do we lose?
And I think, so in 113, which is modern Europe, it's interesting, this is my first time teaching that now that I've gone halftime history department. And
you're talking about course number.
Yeah.
Right. 113.
Right, right, which is modern Europe.
Yep.
And when you get to the Industrial Revolution, one of the things that one of the books I use, I think it does a really good job of, is it uses the teddy bear as a segue, where the teddy bear becomes popularized in America for Teddy Roosevelt, but makes its way to Europe. And you have like all these bear-centered things that make its way into countries where a bear would have been something to be feared, associated with nature, with the wild. And now it's this domesticated, like, friendly animal. And think even our childhood, like, what was a Yogi Bear, you know, or the different cartoons. And bears are like, oh, you're going to sleep with this, you know, teddy bear. And this kind of domestication of the wild, even. And as you've mentioned with modernism, Michael, these notions of, like, we're going to now control the wild and not just control it, but even harness it.
We look over it.
Yeah, think of like water power, right? We're gonna hydropower. We're gonna take resources, coal, etc. And so you get the growth of zoos, and what zoos become is a way of like being reattached to nature, but it's a fabricated nature, right? We're gonna come and we're gonna create these exhibits that kind of reflect what nature was like or is like. You know, a lot of times these are animals from different places, but you even get human exhibits where people are taken from villages in Africa and then they're put in the middle of Europe and they say, well, just live your normal African life. And the people are like, we're hunter-gatherers. Like, what do you expect us to do? And that's kind of a, you know, we look now and we go, how could they do that? This is a terrible thing. But what it's showing is there was some sort of like societal grappling with what is our relationship with nature? And in nature, part of the question was, what's our relationship with the past? Because we live in a new world. This is a world that was much more animated in the past, much more connected to things non-human. And as you had moves to cities, to industry, et cetera, stuff like that changed. And so I think that got me thinking, you know, it's interesting to look at. So Middle Ages think ritual, and some of the big advancements in the Middle Ages were ritual advancements. They can build these big cathedrals, which is very impressive that they got this technology to do the pageantry of the Middle Ages. And so, you know, ritual defines so many aspects of life, not just church life, but chivalry, you know, all of these things.
Symbols mattered.
Yeah, then you get the Reformation, and it's the printing press. It's text-based. It's university-based and text-based, and it's big ideas. And this is going to lead to popular propaganda. This will eventually lead to things like periodicals and newspapers. But very text-based, and still today, Protestants, you know, really hardcore Protestants, we're going to know our Bibles, we're going to quote our Bibles, we're going to be talking about personal Bible study. And so how we thought and did things were very textual.
And what did you lose?
Exactly. And while I think early Lutheranism tried to hold on to both these things, you see a shifting where, in many ways, the gospel becomes data in much of Protestantism. But then you get the Industrial Revolution and you get the idea of machines. And you've talked about this with shifting views of human nature before, Michael, but the idea of now a human is right in relationship to machine. And think of the workplace, and this is largely what begins to happen. You go to work, you're interacting with machines, you get to, you know, eventually the assembly line, right? And this is where there's a famous University of Michigan graduate who, I don't endorse everything he did, but he wrote a manifesto. I think he signed it Go Blue. Could be.
I don't think he was a football fan, but yeah.
But Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. And his manifesto kind of draws a lot on, I believe it's Jacques Ellul, a French tech, kind of a philosopher of technology. And hopefully I'm saying his name right. I did read some of his works because the Unabomber got me into him. But he's talking about kind of like how...
Typical Michigan State fan. Yeah. Always so concerned about Michigan.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I'm saying his manifesto is interesting. And what he's getting at, he's not wrong that we've been separated from like the end goal of our labor. We're not connected now to anything. We're just a cog. And what is that? That's we've become machine, or we had at that time. And I think now, and we see this, I think, even with cars, to go back to the opening, mm-hmm. right? People see a car as an extension of their personality, right? Sometimes people say that people look like their dogs, you know. Yeah, yeah. But cars, we see that as an extension of our personality. You know, I'm going to have the big, loud, scary car, or I'm going to have the quiet, you know, responsible, whatever car. When we're driving, we don't think of the car as a separate thing. We think of an extension of ourselves, which is why the person in the car thinks they take priority over the person in the bike, because they take more space. They're bigger. And I do this. I get upset at bicyclists when I'm in a car.
How could you not?
Right. Because I, as my book one day will be entitled, "You are who you are when you drive." But as Jason was saying, the machine brings something out of you that's you, but it also shapes you. So you're not only putting some of you into the machine, but the machine is to some degree shaping who you are. And I think the big development in our day has been computer technology. And so I've been looking a lot in the subreddit on Reddit for teachers. It's really fascinating. We have a high school teacher here, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but especially middle school teachers, I'm just seeing a ton now of, and they say maybe partly COVID, but also how we've been teaching things for a while, of students who honestly have zero interest. They say well-behaved kids, nice kids, but see zero value in actually learning, and they just want the busy work. Do the work, get the grade, right? Mm-hmm. And all of us, a really interesting thread was on, we can't assign novels anymore. And it wasn't like they weren't allowed to assign novels, but that they're dealing with kids who just are not equipped to get through.
And if you do
a novel,
you have to read in class.
Right. And this was a big point that a lot of them made, or play an audiobook in class. And it's not necessarily like they're just coming out judging these kids. And it's not like they're just judging their fellow teachers, although sometimes they will say, how are we supposed to fix this in 8th, 9th, 10th grade if it hasn't been fixed earlier? But a big part is we're getting the kids now who not only were iPad kids, but in the pandemic had a few years of learning that was, what can you do remotely? Do this thing, turn it in. And so I think when Truman says there, and I think this is interesting, right, what was all this technology supposed to do? Do you remember when the internet, like, took off? I don't mean when it was invented, but when it started to impact us. I still remember my roommate, Rob, getting a laptop and me being like, bro, you're wasting your money. Why would you get that? And he's like, talk about all the internet things he can do. I'm like, that's just a fad. You know? And I can just go to the computer lab and type my paper. Like, what are you doing this for? And now, if I like go somewhere and there's no Wi-Fi, like, how am I supposed to do anything? How am I supposed to get anything done?
Wi-Fi is a right.
Yeah. And when the internet first started taking off like that, it was all about, we're going to become so much smarter because we're going to have access to all the world's best databases, manuscripts, art, music. And what did the internet really turn into? Gambling and pornography and Netflix, right? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that makes the internet bad. The internet's a wonderful tool, and there will always be brilliant minds who have the discipline to use any new technology in the way that people best hoped it would be used and accomplish great things. But there's always a part of even them, but us as well, all of us, who are going to be shaped by, we're shaped by the tools we use. Why was what communism, the hammer and the sickle? Right? So much of how people have seen their occupations in history involve the technology that they engaged with, right? These tools, think even like ancient Roman symbols and stuff like this. What's going to be beaten, right? The swords will be beaten in plowshares, right? In the Old Testament. And I do think what really struck me here is I think we are seeing, and part of this is just we're neck deep in it, and so we're always going to be most concerned with the thing we're neck deep in. But that end part here where he says, we're the only creatures on the planet who are intelligent and intentional enough to have abolished ourselves. And I do think, you know, that is an interesting thing we face in our day and age, because the technology we're dealing with now is not just bodily, It's not just helping our body do things. And there is a certain diminishment that Unabomber's right in just bodily technology that helps me make a product, right? This kind of bare capitalistic, like, okay, here's, I'm just making a product and I'm making it cheap enough that someone's going to make money off of it. But I think so much of what we're dealing with now is the intellect as well. It's a very liberal arts thing. My ability to actually think and reason. And that's, I think, particularly troubling. And I see it in my own life. I used to have an attention span. Mm. I used to sit and read for like 20 minutes. Now I go 5 and I have to touch the screen just to make sure time still exists.
Yeah.
And then, oh, yep, there's weather, you know, and then, oh, yep, someone ate lunch. And I do think there's something to what he's getting at there. And it's even, you see these commercials now, you know, like, let's say Grammarly, which used to be just help you fix your grammar, but now is generative AI as well. And it's like, oh, help, we'll write your emails for you and whatever else. Well, that's great. Like, if you're not a great writer, okay, you might have a good email. It'll help you keep a job. But we're getting to, like, the most basic human thing of thought and communication.
And I maybe to put it into, like, a law gospel paradigm, but also, like, freedom and prison, the things that were supposed to free us actually have imprisoned us. And we've talked about with cars, like, the American ideal, and when cars were cars, if you're an older car guy or yeah. something like that, it was a sense of freedom. It was on the road.
Yep.
And when you lose your car keys when you're like 80, that you lose your freedom. But for us right now, cars are a necessity, and they hurt my freedom because they cost so much. Yep. And they cost so much time to repair and to maintain.
And the way our cities look, right. how our neighborhoods are. Yeah. Right.
So the very thing that was meant to be an advancement towards our freedom and to our enjoyment can become something that's that ends up being a prison. So when you have email, that's awesome. Freedom, easier, can become a prison. Same with internet, everything else. But when we were talking about the education, it's not just, you know, our time right now, but just the fact that we're obsessed with assessment, which right. is law, right?
Which led to part of this, I'm sure.
So I routinely tell my students, like, the only reason we have tests and papers and stuff is because of law, right? You should want to be here to learn. And if you can get over that and know that, okay, I got to do this because we have to, but then actually start to love knowledge, then everything else, including the grades, will follow where they need to be. It's hard, right? It's hard to think about that. And so everything's law, right? It's just all law. And you have to be freed by the gospel, right? So that you're not trying to self-justify in all these different ways. And then the gospel does allow you to then be free for something, right? Where you can say, okay, I don't have to have another law, which is to say, well, I'm just going to get rid of my phone and that right. won't be the problem. Because that's just a law answer to a law question.
Right. right. And it's to just completely raise your kids without any technology. Yeah. That right, there's got to be a fine line, because if I'm just going to raise my kids without any technology, well, now they're not going to be equipped to handle it when they get older, which they inevitably have to do in the workplace. So I'm not saying let's just get rid of everything. I do think, though, you know, you mentioned with all these different things, the thing with that I think is unique with our challenge today is, like, car culture, yes, it stinks when my car breaks down, but I know how to walk. Like, I learned how to walk, right? And it stinks when, like, my chainsaw breaks. But I have a handsaw, right? It's just going to be a little bit more work, and I know how to use it. While the microwave goes down, all right, I got to use the oven. What scares me with what we're looking at now is if increasingly we don't know how to think for ourselves, and this is this is a liberal arts argument, I'll admit it, but I'm not coming at it from that perspective. I'm not going to just pick that up later in life. And so that's a problem for me personally in my freedom and my ability even to ask the big questions that need to be asked before I die. It's a problem for the church. It's a problem for society. And that's especially, I guess, what I take away from that quote. And that's not to say, again, that we should be hopeless, because if there's any institution that throughout time has been meant to have the remedies for all these challenges, it's the church. And does the church always get caught up in its age to a degree? Yes. But the church still has a capacity for ritual. The church still has a capacity for text. The church has a capacity for technology like we're using. I mean, what a wonderful way to share the gospel that we can seize.
Like you say, that the church has a unique position here to educate, be about the well. One and the many, to be about education, information, but also symbolism, to be formative.
Yep. And this is a thing vocationally for Christians then, that we, a gift that we can give in a time that is particularly challenged.
I was going to say, to be about the whole person too,
right?
Where I think, you know, so much of this, you know, some of these things, you get wedged into one spot or cut off from other places, you know, even in who you are, you know, but church, you know, doesn't do that, or at least shouldn't, right?
I we're probably out of time.
We got 3 minutes.
I say, from a practical point of view, like, there are law questions, there's law problems, don't answer it with a law solution. So, okay, think about Industrial Revolution. You know, the family is separated from the job, right? You now you have a question of work life, work family balance or whatever. Well, if you go down to a law answer, which is make sure you balance this out, you know, by, you know, then you really haven't solved it. You haven't asked the big question. And so if you say, well, the problem's technology, get rid of technology, well, you've answered a law problem with a law solution, right? So how can you do this? Well, get your butt in church, have a physical interaction with God and his people and his supper in particular.
Ora et labora a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, put the big questions before your children as much as you can, right? Instead of making everything just about, well, back to the Greeks, right? The solution is ignorance, or the problem is ignorance, and the solution is information. Not really, right? That's part of it, right? And it almost always ends up with more information, which is typically a law answer to a law question.
Right. All right, well, we've got about 1 minute, so unless you got something, Jason, we'll wrap it up. But I think this is a good conversation. I enjoyed it. And there's, I think, things that we can come out of this with. At some point, we're going to have to do an episode on not withdrawing, right? Because I think you're making an excellent point, Michael, with you don't just give the whole thing up. You know, and there is this monastic impulse, which is not...
Always there. Always
right.
Monastic impulse.
And I think that's a good caution. And I, even as, hopefully, people listening to me, I sound maybe a little bit more alarmist than the other two of you. That's good for me to be reminded as well.
And maybe another topic is teleology.
Right? Yeah.
This was underneath all of it. What is my end goal? What is my purpose?
Yeah. So we stayed rather disciplined after the first 6 minutes.
Excellent.
And this new let the bird fly way of doing things.
Applause.
Yeah. Yes. It's going to take too long time-wise for me to switch over, but we'll do that. And we hope you, in the midst of a world full of technology, are able to live in freedom and enjoy and let the bird fly. Every evening when the
sun goes down. Get with my party and I begin to cry. I don't care what the people are thinking. I'm not drunk, I'm just a drinker. I set them up another round. I set them up another round. I set them up another round. One more round won't get me